Good morning, everyone. And greetings to our guests that we have that may be traveling for the holiday weekend. And I see a few people from the PM congregation here this morning. So welcome to the AM congregation, Cincinnati East. I want to start off with a riddle I came up with. It goes, what do we all have that is the same, yet different? What do we all have that is the same, yet different? We have them each and every day. You probably had them when you got up this morning, when you drove to church this morning, when you came in the door this morning. When you started talking to people, you had them. Even me standing here today, I have them, and you probably have them of me also. What do we all have? What do we all have that is the same, yet different? It's expectations. We all have expectations. We live a life full of expectations. We have expectations of ourselves, of each other's, and things around us. This morning, at least in our house, we had the expectation of what time we'd leave for church based on how long it would take us to get here and what time we wanted to arrive. This morning, the expectation wasn't met. And this morning, it was my fault. I also had a realistic expectation that my first expectation would be met based on past expectations. I don't want a show of hands, but how many of you already had expectations this morning that haven't been met? I see one hand. Maybe you had the same expectation that I did, that I want to be at church by a certain time. So you started getting everything ready to go, and maybe right before you walked out the door, the phone rang. Or for those with small babies, which we had at one time, they needed a diaper change at the last minute. So you had to stop, change the diaper, get them redressed, or they spit up on your clothes, and so the first thing you do is go back, get a whole different outfit, and if it's a wife, it takes a bit longer because they got to make sure everything matches. But we've all been there. We've all had expectations in our lives that something came up that kept us from having them. But how do we manage expectations? But more importantly, how do we manage unexpected expectations? The title for the split sermon this morning is Managing Unexpected Expectations. Managing Unexpected Expectations. When our expectations meet what we think is going to happen, say at work you're expecting a raise, you get a raise, everything's good, maybe you do a little happy dance, but life is good. You don't really give it much thought. In fact, from the standpoint that your expectations were met. But and sometimes something sad will happen. Sometimes expectations don't always have to be good. Sometimes you'll be knowing someone's sick or something, and maybe it doesn't work out the way they want, but you kind of expected it. Say maybe someone had health issues and they passed away. You kind of, if you're going into it, sometimes you expect that. Even though it's sad, the results were kind of the way you thought they would be, and you weren't totally shocked by them. Where most people have problems managing expectations is when they're unexpected. When things in life don't turn out the way you expected, this is what causes most problems. I would say most of us deal with unexpected expectations almost on a daily basis. But how do we deal with them? Dealing with expectations has a big effect on our lives and those around us. When I first started thinking about the topic of expectations several months ago when I knew I was going to be speaking, I had an idea in my head what I wanted to say. But it's one of those things that you study a topic and you get more and more into it, you realize it's a bigger and bigger topic than you really first thought it was. So as I went through it, I kind of said, man, this is really too big for a split sermon. It's something that could take several sermons just to start scratching the surface at it. But as I thought about managing unexpected expectations, I boil them down to two aspects. The first aspect is realistic expectations. Realistic expectations. And the second one is unrealistic expectations. When you really think about expectations, they fall into either those two categories. And what do I mean by realistic expectations? A realistic expectation is something that is based on sound, correct, and proven data. An example would be going out to the drinking fountain to get a drink of water. If you've done it in the past, you walked out, pushed a button, water came out, the next time you would walk up there, you would have a realistic expectation that if you pushed the button, water would come out. But managing an unexpected expectation would be if you pushed the water and nothing came out. You're expecting water to come out and nothing came out. How do we respond? Would you be upset? Would you be kind of confused, thinking, what's broken? And that's what I'm kind of talking about when dealing with managing realistic expectations. I want to look at a story in the Bible, which most of us know. It's a story of Esau and Jacob. The part of the story I want to talk about is in Genesis 27. Esau and Jacob. The first part of Genesis 27, verse 1, we see Isaac was old, and his eyes were so dim that he could hardly see. As the story continues in verse 4, we see Isaac called his oldest son, Esau, to him because he had something he wanted to talk to him about. In chapter 27, verse 4, we read, "And make me savory food, such as I love, and bring it to me that I may eat, and that my soul may bless you before I die." So what do you think was going through Esau's mind at this point? Esau had to go hunt some game. And while he was hunting, he probably had time to think about what his father had said to him. He's probably thinking, I'm going to get a great blessing from my dad. While he was hunting, he was probably thinking, okay, what type of food do I want to get? Maybe I want to get a young deer, about a one-year-old that's nice and tender. Now, how am I going to cook this meal? He's probably thinking about what spices he's going to use. This whole time, he was anticipating this expectation that his father is going to give him. His expectations are really running really high. It would be similar to like a teenager. If you have a teenager and you told your teenager, I want to buy you a new car. I want you to go to the store and get a new key ring for the car. And when you come back home, the car is going to be in the driveway. So as the teenager drive away, go get the key chain for their new car keys, what do you think they'd be going through? They'd be thinking about, what color will the car be? What model? Is it a two-door or four-door? Or maybe, if it's a guy, is it a truck? Four-wheel drive, all jacked up. The anticipation for the teenager coming back would be similar to the anticipation that Esau would have had. It would be extremely high. But as we read in the story, we see that Rebekah and Jacob tricked Isaac into giving the blessing to Jacob. Esau comes back in from after hunting and presents his meal to his father, expecting to receive the blessing. At this point, Esau was probably running high on emotions and had great expectations for what his father was going to give him. Then the unexpected happened. He finds out his brother Jacob received the blessing. We see this in Genesis 27, verse 35. We see Isaac saying, but he said, "Your brother came with deceit and has taken away your blessing." The unexpected happened. He finds out his brother Jacob received the blessing. Esau had all these emotions and probably more going through his body. He probably had shock, disbelief, anger. I think we all would probably have those similar responses in a story like this. If we go back up one verse before, in verse 34, we see that Esau cried with an exceedingly great and bitter cry. He didn't just, after the fact, go back to his room and say, okay, my brother got the best of me again. I'm just going to go back and just kind of hang out. No, we see he was hurting deep inside. His pain was at the gut level. He was just really, really hurt, upset, confused, angry. This blew away any realistic expectation that he had of what he was about to receive. So my first aspect of realistic expectations was, I ask, was Esau's expectation realistic? I would say yes. It was founded on tradition. It was founded on the word of his father, who he had a close and personal relationship with. In Esau's mind, he had no doubt he was going to receive that blessing from his father. He did nothing wrong in this part of the story. All he did was go hunting for some food and come back to present it to his father. What we see is Esau received an unexpected expectation in regards to a realistic expectation. But how does Esau respond to this unexpected expectation? How does he respond? We see this in verse 41. So Esau hated Jacob because of the blessing with which his father blessed him. And Esau said in his heart, The days of mourning for my father are at hand. Then I will kill my brother Jacob. So we can see Esau did not respond really well to the situation at hand. I think many of us, again, would probably be very upset. And if we had a younger sibling, you probably wouldn't be too happy with them right now. It wouldn't be one of those things you go up and give them a hug and say, hey, congratulations on the blessing you received. I won't ask for a show of hands, but I want you to think about it. Have you ever experienced anything like this in your life where you had a realistic expectation that didn't turn out the way you expected? How did you respond? How did you respond to a situation like that? I'm going to come back to this story of Esau a little bit later. But now for the second aspect, unrealistic expectation. Unrealistic expectation. Going back, what do I mean by unrealistic expectation? It is something that is based on unsound, incorrect, and unproven data. Going back to my example earlier about the drinking fountain, would be if you walked up to a drinking fountain and you expected chocolate milk to come out. Not because the last time you got a drink, chocolate milk came out. It's just because that's what you wanted. That's what you envisioned that you wanted to happen. So when you went up there and you pushed the button and water came out, you'd be a little shocked. But what if lemonade came out? You'd be even more shocked. That's what I'm kind of talking about, having managing unrealistic expectations. Because it's something that should never happen. Chocolate milk coming out of the drinking fountain, but you're still thinking it is. So let's look at another story in the Bible that kind of goes along with this thought. There's two parts to the story that I'm going to be talking about. The story is about King Saul. The first part of the story I want to talk about is in 1 Samuel 13. We come to the story where King Saul was in his second year of reign as king, and he's getting ready to go to battle against the Philistines. We see in verse 8 of 1 Samuel 13, that King Saul waited 7 days for Samuel to arrive. And this wasn't the first time Saul had to wait for Samuel to arrive. A reference would be in 1 Samuel 10:8. It says, 7 days you shall wait till I come to you and show you what you should do. So there was prior history that King Saul was supposed to wait for Samuel to arrive. Whether he was told specifically to wait 7 days, it doesn't really say. But what we do see here in the story is, King Saul knew he was supposed to wait 7 days. So let's quickly look at the story in verse 8 through 12. Verses 8 through 12 of 1 Samuel 13. And he waited 7 days according to the time set by Samuel. But Samuel did not come to Gilgal. But the people were scattered from him. So Saul said, bring a burnt offering and peace offering here to me. And he offered the burnt offering. Now it happened as soon as he had finished presenting the burnt offering that Samuel came. And Saul went out to meet him, that he might greet him. And Samuel said, what have you done? Said Saul. Or what have you done? Saul said, Saul said, when I saw the people were scattering from me, that you did not come within the days appointed, that the Philistines gathered together at Mishmash. Then I said, the Philistines will now come down on me at Gilgal, and I have not made supplication to the Lord. Therefore I felt compelled and offered a burnt offering. What we see in the story is Saul got tired of waiting and unlawfully offered a sacrifice that was strictly held to the priest to give. Maybe he didn't follow, maybe he did this based on his knowledge of the Canaanites' model of kingship, where the king has certain priestly prerogatives to actually offer sacrifices. As king, maybe he felt, hey, I'm the king. I can do whatever I want, however I want, and it doesn't really matter. What we see is King Saul did not have the patience to wait for Samuel to arrive and had the expectation that it was okay for him to perform the sacrifice himself. Going back up to verse 10, we see that King Saul went out to meet him, that is, Samuel, that he may greet him. You notice Saul did not go out and apologize for doing the sacrifice. Many people, when they do something wrong, they either try to hide from it or they try to apologize for it right away. We don't see any of this from Saul. From the story flow, we kind of see that the expectation was more important for the sacrifice to be done than for Samuel to arrive to do it. So King Saul was really thinking he was doing nothing wrong. That was his expectation. This is okay to do. Second part of the story of King Saul I want to look at is in chapter 15 of 1 Samuel. Just two chapters over. Here we see the story of Samuel telling King Saul that God wants him to utterly destroy Amalekites and do not spare anyone, including the animals. We see this in verse 3. For what they did to Israel years before. If you remember, the Amalekites, when Israel was leaving Egypt, they were attacking them from the rear. They were kind of picking off the stragglers and kind of being a pest to Israel. And it offended God. So now we see the story where King Saul was told to go destroy them for that. As we drop down this story, after the battle was over, we see in verse 8 what happened. 1 Samuel 15, verse 8. He also took Agag, king of the Amalekites, alive, and utterly destroyed all the people with the edge of the sword. Continuing verse 9, but Saul and the people spared Agag and the best of the sheep, the oxen, the fatlings, the lambs, and all that was good, and were unwilling to utterly destroy them, but everything despised and worthless, that they utterly destroyed. We see in verse 9 that King Saul mostly did what he was told to do. And dropping down in verse 12, we see this, what was on Saul's mind. In verse 12, when Samuel rose early in the morning to meet Saul, it was told Samuel, saying, Saul went to Carmel. Indeed, he set up a monument for himself, and he has gone on around, passed by, and gone down to Gilgal. The Amplified Bible reads, he set up himself a monument or trophy of his victories. Saul's focus was on himself, not on what God had told him to do. We see that Saul has marched around in great state to Gilgal. When it says he had gone around, passed by, and gone down, he didn't take the straight path. He wanted everybody to see how great he was, so he meandered around as he went from Carmel down to Gilgal. Reading on in verse 13, it says, and Samuel went to Saul, and Saul said to him, blessed are you, Lord, I have performed the commandments of the Lord. So at this point, you see, Saul still thinks he did everything correctly. Saul is boasting about what he had done. I have performed the commandments of the Lord, is what Saul said. Saul expected to hear the words, well done, good and faithful servant. That was what was on Saul's mind, probably. Saul had great expectations of hearing great things said about him. Saul was not expecting to hear what Samuel had to say to him. We see in verse 14, it says, Samuel said, what then is this bleating of the sheep in my ears and the lowing of the oxen which I hear? And Saul was quickly to point out that the people were the ones not to obey. So he's still thinking he obeyed, but the people didn't obey now. In verse 15, and Saul said, they have brought them from the Amalekites. For the people spared the best of the sheep and the oxen to sacrifice to the Lord your God, and the rest we have utterly destroyed. It wasn't me, it was the people who didn't obey. And he even goes on and says, your God, not my God or our God. He's trying to like distance himself from God at this point when he says, your God. He's talking about Samuel's God, not his God. And Samuel said to Saul, in verse 16, be quiet, and I will tell you what the Lord said to me last night. And he said to him, speak on. So Saul is expecting, okay, I'm still expecting this great blessing, this great congratulations from God. He's just not really getting it. So what we see is his expectations kept him from seeing what was really going on. His expectations was blinding him from the reality of the situation. So in verse 17 through 21 is what Samuel had to say. So Samuel said, when you were little in your own eyes, were you not the head of the tribes of Israel? And did not the Lord anoint you king over Israel? Now the Lord sent you on a mission and said, go and utterly destroy the sinners, the Amalekites, and fight against them until they are consumed. Why then did you not obey the voice of the Lord? Why did you swoop down on the spoils and do evil in the sight of the Lord? Again, Saul denies the charges of sinning. We see this in verse 20. And Saul said to Samuel, but I have obeyed the voice of the Lord and gone on the mission which the Lord sent me and brought back Agag, king of the Amalekite, and have utterly destroyed the Amalekites. So in Saul's mind, he did everything he was supposed to do. In verse 21, but the people took the plunder, the sheep, the ox, the best of the things which should have been utterly destroyed to sacrifice to the Lord, your God, in Gilgal. Again, we see Saul putting the blame on the people. Has anything really ever changed over time? If we look at the world around us, those who run the country, they still mess things up, but they still blame others for it. They never really take responsibility for their actions. Moving on in the story, in verse 23, we read, "Because you have rejected the word of the Lord, he has also rejected you from being king." I find it interesting that this all takes place in Gilgal. Gilgal is where Saul was made king. A reference would be 1 Samuel 11:15. And we see verse 23 is where God rejected Saul from being king. I kind of think it was kind of interesting. That's where he started his kind of kingship, and that's where kind of God started taking it away from him. In verse 24, we see Saul finally admitted he sinned. In verse 25, Saul asked Samuel to pardon his sin. He didn't ask God to pardon his sin. He asked Samuel to. Now, dropping down to verse 30, Saul still had the expectation he was to be honored for what he did. In verse 30 of 1 Samuel 15, then he said, "I have sinned, yet honor me now, please, before the elders of my people and before Israel, and return with me, that I may worship the Lord your God." How does Saul respond to the unexpected expectations in the two stories we talked about in chapter 13 and 15? Saul had an unrealistic expectation that he as king can do whatever he wants, and the rules didn't really apply to him. In chapter 13, we see that the expectation he could offer sacrifices. He thought that was okay for him to do. And in chapter 15, he didn't really have to follow the commandments of God. He thought he could do what he wanted. Saul had unexpected expectations with regards to unrealistic expectations. By looking at these two stories, we see Saul had unexpected expectations. Both times it did not turn out the way Saul thought they would. Why? Because they were unrealistic expectations. For Saul thought he did not have to obey God. God says he will not be mocked. Too much is given, much is expected. So God's not going to bless someone sinning, especially if you're going to be the king of Israel. What have we seen so far from the story of Esau and the two stories of King Saul? Is that they did not manage unexpected expectations very well. They left out one key element in managing unexpected expectations. Now I want to look at a better approach to dealing with unexpected expectations. Please turn with me to 1 Samuel 1. 1 Samuel 1. We have the story of Hannah. In verse 2, we see Elkanah had two wives, one named Peninnah, who had children, and Hannah, who did not have any children. In regards to having children, I would say Hannah had a realistic expectation that she could have children. I think most women have the expectations that they can't have children. And I base this on the fact that Hannah's mom had children, her grandmother had children, her great-grandmother had children. Otherwise, Hannah wouldn't have been born. So there was a history there of the women having children within the family. So hopefully everyone is in agreement that Hannah had a realistic expectation from the start that she could have children. What we see in the story, Hannah, is that she was unable to have children. So this was an unexpected expectation of Hannah that happened to her. This caused Hannah a lot of grief for years. We see in verse 6 of 1 Samuel that Peninnah provoked Hannah to make her miserable. In verse 6 it reads, "And her rival also provoked her severely to make her miserable because the Lord had closed her womb." And we see this went on for years in verse 7. "So it was, year by year, when she went up to the house of the Lord, that she provoked her, therefore she wept and did not eat." So we see that Peninnah just kept irritating and picking on and harassing Hannah because of what has happened. What we see here is Hannah had a realistic expectation that was not being met. She had done nothing wrong herself that we're aware of, but she had to learn how to manage the unexpected expectation. We see in verse 5 and verse 6, it says, the Lord has closed her womb. In verse 6, because the Lord had closed her womb. Why did God do this or allow this? We do not know. But I find it interesting how many women in the Bible God has used that this has happened to. So whether it was caused by God or just an unforeseen reason, Hannah was unable to get pregnant. The point I want to take away from this story about Hannah is, how did Hannah deal with managing unexpected expectation? Did she lash out at Peninnah because Peninnah could have children? Did Hannah try to get her husband to get rid of her like Sarah did? When, an example, Hannah did none of these. What did she do? She took her problem before God. She went to God for help in understanding why her expectations were not being met. She went to God for a solution to the problem. She did not try to solve the problem on her own or take it out on others, but she went to God. God finally allowed her to have a son named Samuel. And after Samuel, Hannah also had more sons and daughters. When we have expectations that are not being met, when we have unexpected expectations, how do we respond to them? Do we try to solve them and work them out on our own? Or do we take them before God? Do we allow God to show us why our expectations were not met? Or do we just start jumping to conclusions and try and start figuring out ourselves why things are not working out the way we want them? Do we get God involved in our lives in managing unexpected expectations when they happen? Or do we try to manage them ourselves? Along the same lines, we won't turn there, but I think we're all familiar with the story of King David, Uriah the Hittite, and Bathsheba in 2 Samuel 11 and 12. It's a very familiar story. What we see in the story is King David has some unrealistic expectations. And as he went along through the story, he kept trying to work things out the way he wanted things to work out and kept having problems. Eventually, he was able to get Uriah the Hittite killed, but that wasn't in the story. He thought he had been able to cover up his sin, but then Nathan shows up and relates the story to King David. It's kind of similar to what happened to Saul. God sent Samuel to Saul to kind of explain to him, what you've been doing is wrong. Just like Nathan went to King David to tell him, hey, what you've been doing is wrong. But the reaction of how King David responds is totally different than how Saul responded. As the story goes, we know that King David repented. He went before God and said, I screwed up. I did not do what I was expected, which is totally different than what Saul did. Saul kept trying to justify it and kept wanting to be honored. But King David realized he made a mistake. King David realized his expectations were unrealistic. He knew he was wrong. Do we have similar unrealistic expectations like King David had? Are we stuck in a situation where we are trying to manage unrealistic expectations on our own? If we are in this situation, in our attempts, do we make the situation even worse? That's what happened to King David. He kept trying to fix the situation and kept making it worse and worse and worse. Sometimes we can be our own worst enemies in trying to fix something that isn't going to work out because it's unrealistic. In our lives, when our expectations are not being met, do we stop and go before God to find out why our expectations are not being met? Do we go before God and ask Him to show us if this is a realistic expectation or unrealistic expectations? We need to find out if we are the reason why the expectation is not being met. Sometimes realistic expectations aren't going to work out because God has something else in mind for either us or maybe somebody else, that if something happened, it would not go out or happen the way God wants it. But other times, we can be sinning and having unrealistic expectations of how things would turn out. If we are sinning, we can't really expect God to help us with our expectations. God's going to try to show us that we're wrong and that we need to change our viewpoint. Trying to manage unrealistic expectation is a no-win situation, especially if we're sinning. Sometimes we know we're sinning, but sometimes we don't. And when we go before God, God can show us that we are sinning and that our expectations are wrong and that we need to change. As I studied and looked at the topic of managing unexpected expectation, I realized the first step has to include God. This step applies to every expectation we have in our lives. If we're dealing with people, you're dealing with your mate, your children, other family members, at work, your employer, the other employees you work with, they all have expectations of you, and you have them of others. Just driving in the car, you have the expectation that the other people will stay in their lane while you're in your lane so they won't hit you. If you talk to people, you have expectations of how they're going to react to you. Regardless of if the expectation is realistic or unrealistic, we all at some point in time have to deal with the unexpected. It is how we manage unexpected expectations that defines us. Some people have learned very well how to deal with them. Others not so well. But in my study on this topic, I have come to the conclusion that if you do not involve God in the process of managing unexpected expectations, you are setting yourself up for a hard time. You will struggle trying to find answers of why things are happening, and you may or may never find out the answer. But if you involve God, at least you know you're starting with the one being who knows why the unexpected expectations are happening to you. The final thought on this subject is in Hebrews 13, verse 5 and 6. Hebrews 13, 5 and 6. Verse 5 reads, "Let your conduct be without covetousness. Be content with such things as you have. For he himself has said, I will never leave you nor forsake you." In verse 6, "So we boldly say, the Lord is my helper. I will not fear. What can man do to me?" As we go through life trying to manage unexpected expectations in our lives, let's remember to rely on God to help us through the process and go to him first for the help.